The Illness Podcast. I'm running this on the amateur writer, comedian, and photographer page because I cannot get into my own podcast for some reason. I'm waiting for my guest, and we're going to be talking about animal vaccines. And I have a total of three guests that are coming in. Dr. Rebecca Carey, Chris Christine, and Dr. Patricia Jordan. Great for me was that I started the second page last week because I'm looking for an amateur writer, comedian, or photographer to write jokes or a screenplay about this. Hello?
Hi, it's Dr. Jordan. Did you just try to call?
Yes, ma'am. I'm on a different page. The number is 17863.
17863. So that's a different ID number?
That's a different call ID, yeah. Well, thank you for joining me. I apologize for the electronic mishap. I don't know what happened, but it was fortunate of me to have started a second page. And the reason I started the second page was because, this was last week I did this, was for writers, comedians, and photographers, because I'm looking for a screenwriter or a comedian to make jokes about these things. And it's a very effective form of communication. Anyway, today we're talking about animal vaccines. I'd like to touch on the history and the uses and applications and the frequency and so on and so forth. My guests today are Dr. Rebecca Carey, Dr. Patricia Gordon, or Jordan, and Chris Christine, an advocate for vaccine controls. Now, let me start with Chris. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Well, my name is Chris Christine, and I am the founder and co-trustee of the Rabies Challenge Fund. And the Rabies Challenge Fund was established to raise money to conduct 5 and 7 year challenge studies in this country according to USDA vaccine licensing standards in the hopes of replicating the French study from 1992 that demonstrated that dogs were immune to a rabies challenge 5 years after vaccination. And Dr. Ronald Schultz's serological studies at the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine have shown that dogs have antibody titer counts at levels known to confer immunity to rabies 7 years after vaccination. And because the states have annual or triennial rabies laws, we want to make sure that we have the data so that if dogs are being required to be over-vaccinated against rabies, we will have the USDA studies to get the protocol changed and extended.
Okay, how big is your organization? Do you have networks throughout the United States or Canada or anything?
Well, that's interesting. We are a very in terms of the principals, we're a very small organization. We're all volunteers. None of us are paid a salary. We have no infrastructure. There's Dr. Gene Dodds, who's one of the world's leading authorities on veterinary vaccines. She's a veterinary research scientist as well as a practicing clinician. She's from Hemopet in California. Dr. Ronald Schultz, who is another one of the world's leading authorities. He's a veterinary vaccine research scientist from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. And our webmistress is Andrea Brin, and then there's me. And I have an enormous mailing list, and I have about 57,000 people on my email list. But as far as the organization itself, we are very small, and we do not want to have a large infrastructure that would have to be financially supported. So we're small.
Actually, that's how I get away with doing my my TalkCast because I don't have an infrastructure. I follow my own rules. I found that if I join organizations, they apply rules to me, and I don't like them. Dr. Carly, could you introduce yourself, please?
Yes, I was trained as a surgeon, a general surgeon, and about 10 years ago, after my own son was brain damaged from inoculations, and I learned how to reverse it using homeopathy, I started researching the subject of vaccines and have now realized that vaccines cause a corruption in the immune system that leads to all autoimmune diseases and cancer in people and in pets. And it is my mission to stop this insanity. I've also developed a protocol that reverses these situations, and I have clients all over the world, both pets and people, who are doing my protocol. My website is drcarly.com, drcarly.com, and I've had a $10,000 reward posted on my website for almost 2 years for any vaccine promoter to come on my internet radio show. I have 2 shows a week to refute my documents, and I've had no takers. So it's very obvious that they know exactly what they're doing. I'm convinced that this is actually being done intentionally so that Big Pharma can sell their billions of dollars worth of drugs.
Well, I've been on your website, and it is rather impressive.
Thank you.
Dr. Patricia Jordan, would you introduce yourself?
Yes. My name's Dr. Patricia Jordan, and I'm a graduate of North Carolina State College of Veterinary Medicine in 1986. I've been a veterinarian for 24 years. I've been doing allopathic medicine for the first 10 before I realized something was seriously wrong. I went through the program of veterinary school when, and as it is today, there's no nutrition teaching, there's nothing about vaccinology, and very little about immunology. And then I came out in about 1999, I realized, you know, following any of these protocols that we were taught in Western medicine was leading to dead ends. And the first thing I linked it to was, two things, mainly the vaccines and also the feeding of commercial pet foods. And so since then, I've been practicing holistic practice. I've had 6 different practices over the 24 years I've been practicing veterinary medicine. I've seen all scopes, and I have additional training in homeopathy and also in traditional Chinese veterinary medicine and veterinary chiropractic. So I am fully gunned and lettered to discuss what I've been seeing. And actually, the last 5 years have been keeping quite good records of the vaccine-induced damage to the animals.
Okay. Well, now that the introductions are done, can we start with the history of vaccines? Who would like to take that?
Carly?
Yeah, sure. I'll start with it. Well, actually, the major push for vaccinations began when Edward Jenner started doing his research in England at the end of the in the late 1700s and regarding smallpox. Although from my reading, I have also read that these practices of inoculating people with germs, believing they would become immune, had been done prior to that. But that's where the big push really started. And what they did was take cowpox viruses. They would scratch it off infected cows and apply it to human beings, scratching the skin and applying basically the cowpox pus to the skin of people. The first two people that Edward Jenner experimented on was actually his own son and another young boy. Both of them were dead by their early 20s from tuberculosis. Edward Jenner was not even a physician. He actually bought his medical degree for, I think it was £200 from some medical school in England, and that's how this whole insane practice got started. They just had a superstition that if you developed immunity to the cowpox virus, that you would be immune to smallpox. What actually happened is that the cowpox virus combined with the smallpox virus, and it created a new entity, which is called vaccinia. So that's how the whole process got started. And one of the biggest lies that's told, of course, is that smallpox was eradicated through the use of the smallpox vaccine. In fact, the the way that diseases become eradicated is through good nutrition and hygiene. And this is also goes for polio. The reason that the polio epidemic was pretty much wiped out was because they developed sanitation systems. Polio is an enteric virus spread through feces and urine. And after they developed toilets, the polio epidemic went away. And also, as I said, and as Dr. Jordan also said, nutrition is also very important, because if you're getting good food, then of course your immune system is going to be very functional. And what they did was they changed the name of the vaccine-induced diseases. For example, when somebody got polio from the polio vaccine, they would call it aseptic meningitis. And this is what's going on today. For example, autism is actually subacute sclerosing panencephalitis. They just changed the name of the vaccine-induced disease to hide the true cause being the vaccine.
That's
a really interesting point you're raising, Dr. Carley, about the modified live human vaccine viruses that can actually cause the disease. And it's something that I have found most dog owners are unaware can happen in the modified live veterinary vaccines as well, such as distemper, hepatitis, and parvo. The vaccines can actually cause the disease. They're weakened live viruses, unlike the killed vaccines, which are rabies, leptospira, and Lyme,
Portatella,
which cannot cause the disease. So that's a very interesting point for you to raise.
Okay, I would like to mention two things in regards to that. First of all, the allegedly killed vaccines, viruses, the vaccines that contain allegedly killed viruses, they're not always killed. The viruses sometimes are alive. Obviously, they don't check every dose of the vaccine to see if the virus is actually killed. And the second thing is that the way that they're modifying these live viruses, they call them attenuated. But what they're actually doing is passing these viruses through successive tissue cultures. And when they do that, they're actually combining the tissue culture antigen with the virus. And this is very important in terms of causing autoimmune disease, because there's no way to separate the tissue culture antigens from the actual virus. So, for example, if you're injected with a monkey kidney and your body sees that monkey kidney tissue is foreign, it will develop antibodies against the monkey kidney, and those antibodies will attack your kidney and give you any kind of the autoimmune problems with the kidney, et cetera, et cetera. If it attacks the joints, you get arthritis. If it attacks the brain, you get one of the many neurological vaccine-induced diseases. And
can I interject here?
Certainly.
This Dr. Jordan.
Yes.
Okay, and I can go ahead and tell you what's happening with the animals. As far as research, there's been a very well-documented study at Purdue, which is done by Dr. Glickman, who has been associated with many vaccine research. But his specific study was called the Haywood Study, and it proved that only vaccinated animals were developing autoantibodies. And what were these autoantibodies being developed to but their entire structure of support? The myelin that goes around the sheaths of the nerves, the lamellin, the collagen, the cardiolin that makes up their heart muscle. And along with realizing that this was really true and understanding what Dr. Carley has been able to put together with the pieces, it made me see that just about every single internal medicine problem that we see today in veterinary medicine can be traced back to a vaccine-induced disease problem. I even had a case this week of where I am very sure that the hip dysplasia is coming from trauma done to that leg with the multiple use of year after year immune assaults of dirty vaccines that have not only modified live viruses, not only killed viruses that are not even needed, not only Bactrins from like Leptospira, Bordetella, Lyme's vaccine, which, by the way, our leading researcher, Dr. Ronald Schultz, will not even vaccinate his own animals using the Lyme's or the Lepto, even though he lives in a leptospirosis and Lyme endemic area. But with using this, what he calls the mumbo jumbo, and what Dr. Gene Dodds refers to as the mumbo wombo, that they are getting all of these antigens produced against their own tissue, and then they start turning on themselves. This is what autoimmune disease is. They have very clear effects from the research showing that this is where our thyroid disease is coming from, this is where our Cushing's disease is coming from, this is where our diabetes is coming from, this is where our Addison's disease is coming from, and then with the information that we know that the adjuvants in the veterinary vaccines definitely, clearly, the amount of information that's been produced from 2000 to 2007 by our vaccine induced sarcoma task force that was originally set up to study the vaccine induced tumors that were occurring in cats found out that it wasn't just cats, it was ferrets, it was dogs, it's horses. Everybody who's getting vaccinated is getting cancer. And as a result of how much stimulation they have, that adjuvant in the vaccine is going in and it's mutating our P53 oncogene, which is there in all the mammals to help protect them against cancer. Instead, it's suffocating the ability of P53 to suppress tumorigenesis and in essence is actually causing cancer. So then when you see these animals that are severely over-vaccinated, not just with the rabies vaccine, which is the most provocative and adverse reaction vaccine that we have because it's killed and it has the addition of the adjuvant in it, but you have all of these in combination and given year after year after year after year, especially I've never seen it as bad as it is in the state of Massachusetts. Massachusetts seems to have no conscience on making sure that these dogs are not over-vaccinated. They're not telling the clients that they're one-year rabies. If it's done the next year within this time frame, that they'll get a three-year, and instead they're just vaccinating them with all of these multiple antigen vaccines every single year until by the time they're 5 years of age, their health is shot.
Patricia, this is Chris. I wanted to make a comment on that because I think it's an extremely interesting point. And friends of mine who are dog owners come to me and tell me that their veterinarians have told them that if they give their animal a booster shot, even if it's redundant, that it will enhance the dog's immunity, which is not true. And they also have told me that the veterinarian told them that it will not cause any harm. And one of the things that the American Veterinary Medical Association's principles of vaccination has stated is that unnecessary stimulation of the immune system does not enhance immunity. It may increase your antibody titer count, but it will not enhance your immunity. If you're immune, getting a redundant vaccination is not going to increase your immunity to the particular disease, and it will unnecessarily expose you to the adverse effects associated with the vaccine, some of which can be life-threatening.
Yes.
So I think that's an interesting point that
you raised,
people are vaccinating every year or too often.
Right. Dr.
Ladies, I have to step away from the computer. Please continue without me. I'll be right back.
Okay, I would like to say that Dr. Dodds, in her talk that was given at the annual conference in Tulsa last year, actually said we've got her tape videotaped because it's the question and answer period that was the most exciting. Her reason for giving the talk was, why were veterinarians not incorporating the new recommendations of putting the vaccines out to every 3 years? Was it ignorance or was it something else? I had emailed Dr. Dodds and said, are you going to do what I think you're going to do? And she said, yes, I am. We now have absolute proof, not only from Dr. Schultz, not only from Dr. Dodds, but a whole milieu of researchers that have provided us with the information that they are not different, the dogs are not different from the mammals. As a matter of fact, the AVMA even have a statement from that in how they generate their immunity. We don't get our vaccinations every year, and there's quite a few articles out there that state that you can have a blocking of the complexes produced to help protect an animal. Once you understand more about immunity, which, like I said, veterinarians are given little to zero vaccinology, immunology, or nutrition training when they go to school. So whatever they're quoting, I would like to know. If a veterinarian was to say that to one of your dog owners, I would turn around and give a blank page to that veterinarian and have them write down on that paper what was even in that vaccine that they were getting ready to inject into my animal, because most of them have not read the MSDS sheets, the Master Safety Data Sheets. They do not even know what components are in that vaccine, and they do not have any safety studies. There's no carcinogenic studies that were done. Most of these were never tested in combination, and they certainly were never tested on animals that were getting this mumbo-jumbo every single year. So for them to go ahead and say that, oh, no, that this is safe, it's a lie. They have no proof. There is no scientific evidence that the animals ever needed the vaccines this often. There's also no it's not evidence-based medicine to even do that. And I consider the vaccination process the most dangerous medical procedure act that is done on a daily basis throughout the United States and the world in any veterinary clinic, and for that matter, any hospital that administers it to humans.
I totally concur.
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned the correlation with the human vaccines, because the American Animal Hospital Association has stated in their guidelines that there is no reason to believe that the human immune system or that the canine immune system works any differently than the human immune system. And as you said, you know, people don't have boosters of polio, modified live polio vaccine after their initial childhood series. They don't receive tetanus boosters every year or every 3 years, and for some reason people have not drawn that analogy with the human vaccine.
Now, where that information came from to start doing dogs every year, I've done as much research as I can into this. I've talked to doctors that are much older than I am that have been in practice for 40 years to my 20. And as best as I can come up about, and these are from some of the fairly high up professors at some of the institutions, they said it came out of an AVMA, which is the American Veterinary Medical Association roundtable discussion. There was not one scientist on that roundtable. There was not one feline practitioner. They were cow vets, and I'm not so sure that I can't prove it, but I would wonder where there might have been some provocation from the marketers of the vaccine to just say, hey, let's start doing this every year. Now, Dr. Pitcairn, who I studied homeopathy with, he did say that he does remember two unrelated dogs that were older coming down with hard pad disease, which is, by the way, a chronic form of distemper. And he felt like it might have been an inappropriate response to that, not understanding not only what disease does, not understanding that vaccination actually injects the disease in a chronic form, but that, you know, that's where they first started saying, well, maybe we have to do this more often. Now, I just today received an email from one of my colleagues who had said that she had hired a practice, somebody who comes in and evaluates the practice to see what they could do. I think she was having that done before she sold her practice in Texas. But that he had said to her that she needed to be vaccinating everything because it was a moneymaker. This has nothing to do with the health of the animal. This has nothing to do with anything except for making money. Now, one of the things that
the veterinary trade journals have been very open and frank about the discussion in their in-house, you know, the veterinary publications about the financial link with vaccines. There was an August 2004 cover story in Veterinary Economics entitled Targeting Changing Vaccine Protocols, and they stated right in there that in the 1970s and 80s, many veterinarians derived a substantial percent of their total incomes from vaccinating dogs and cats. And in many practices today, the vaccination reminder is the one thing that drives visits from healthy pets. So changing your vaccine protocols could have a significant effect on practice finances.
Yes.
Is that what they're calling the vaccine hook?
That's
in another article they call, in a DVM article entitled What Do We Tell Our Clients? And that was from July 1st, 2003 article, and they say, quote, it has finally happened. The American Animal Hospital Association has released canine vaccine guidelines. Some practitioners may dread it and consider the recommendations as a, quote, practice buster. The concern, of course, is the loss of our, quote, vaccine hook. So, you know, they have
addressed
this issue.
Yeah, I'll let you know that two years ago, when I went looking for a job, when I sold my practices, I went to 13 different states in the United States and never found one that wasn't vaccine linked. One of them in Orange County, California, that I interviewed with told me, I maintain a $2 million a year vaccine-based practice, and I'm afraid they're going to take that away from me. The other one here
wow.
in Massachusetts to do part-time work, the first thing I asked him was, I want to know about your vaccine policies. And when he told me he was doing it every year, I said, "Why?" I said, are you not AHA certified? Yes, I am. I said, well, are you not even incorporating the recommendations from the AVMA and AHA and AAFP about going to every 3 years? And his reply to me was, no, if I do that, they won't come in. So, I mean, I don't – that's just not a significant answer. To defend the veterinarians that were trained even before I am, I'm telling you, they didn't get any vaccinology. So this is not even in their radar. They don't even – they cannot see – that what they are actually producing with yearly vaccination is the job security of inducing chronic disease in the very clients who are most loyal.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
This is Dr. Crowley.
I just wanted to mention two things.
It's a very strange angle on the phone.
Anyway.
First of all, in particular, Harris Tools of Internal Medicine, the Bible all over the world learned this concept of internal medicine, Dr. Jordan said, is all vaccine diseases. It actually stated in addition that vaccines do not prevent disease, in fact they give you a chronic disease. And this is mentioned in my response to the CDC public health protection guide, which is on my website. The second thing I would like to mention is that I am concerned in terms of people, which is primarily the physicians that are assaulting children, that they know very well that the vaccine is causing diseases, and if they don't have a practice, that's doing, creating disease with vaccination.
Dr. Crowley, I get a terrible echo here, too.
Yes.
Oh, it's gone. Oh, I guess it was Chris that was creating the echo. Can we go into exactly what makes up these vaccines? I mean, I understand the idea of giving a little hair of the dog that bit you mentality, and it may or may not have worked with smallpox. From the Chinese through the Arabs right into England with Jenner. But there are so many other things involved. I wonder if you could explain the other elements of vaccines.
Well, there's so many things in vaccines, and the CDC actually lists on their website some of the ingredients, and they make a ridiculous statement, something to the effect of that, you know, we're all exposed to so many poisons every day, what's a few more? But one of the most serious, of course, is the preservatives, especially thimerosal, which has toxic mercury as its main ingredient. And I am convinced beyond any doubt that mercury actually causes Alzheimer's in conjunction with aluminum. When you do the pathology of people's brains that have Alzheimer's, they actually stain for aluminum, which is also in vaccines, and this causes a stain to be shown in the vaccines. The aluminum is used as an adjuvant, and I actually just received yesterday a book that one of my listeners to one of my radio shows had recommended, which is entitled Immunological Adjuvants and Vaccines, edited by Gregory Das. Which is published by NATO, amazingly enough. And right in this book, on page 9, it actually states that the use of low doses of antigen with alum, i.e. aluminum, actually produces IgE antibodies. And this was an amazing find to me because I've been saying for years that the process of inoculation bypassing secretory IgA in the upper GI and respiratory tracts is what, in fact,
causes the corruption of the immune system that causes autoimmune disease and cancer, where the B cells go into hyperdrive and the T cells are pretty much paralyzed. And in fact, this book actually states, and this was published in the 1980s, that this is producing IgE. IgE is the antibody of allergy, and it's actually exactly the same as IgA. From researching my medical books, immunology books, I found that they're actually exactly identical. The only way you can even tell one from the other is by seeing what its effects are experimentally. So those are two of the major problems that are in the vaccines, the preservatives and the aluminum. And, of course, they've been talking about mercury in the autism community especially because they want people to believe that if they take the mercury out, the vaccines will be safe, and a bigger lie has never been told. So those are just two of the things. But there's also, as I mentioned, whatever tissue they're using to culture the viruses on. Over 13 vaccines now use aborted fetal cells to culture the vaccines on. So in my opinion, this is even a spiritual assault. This is basically cannibalism. But no matter what tissue is used to culture the viruses or bacteria, that is also being injected into you. So you're producing autoantibodies that are then attacking the body. So those are just some of the ingredients. There's antibiotics in some vaccines. There's formaldehyde, which is used to pickle dead people, which is a carcinogen.
Propylene glycol.
Yes. Antifreeze. Yes. I mean,
antifreeze is in.
Oh, my word. Yes. It is so amazing. And you ask yourself, how did this insanity get promoted to the degree it did? And I want to also just mention that about a week ago, there was a show on Larry King Live where Jenny McCarthy, whose son became autistic after the measles vaccine, was on. And there were a bunch of pediatricians. And they had the actual president-elect of the American Academy of Pediatrics on. And he was asked the question, why are they increasing the schedule of the vaccinations? And his reply was, because they're being invented. In other words, if they create a new vaccine, you know, they've got to use it. So they just stick it on the schedule. It's just like Dr. Jordan said, there's absolutely no scientific reason for this. It's all about making money. They make a vaccine, so they're going to use it. And that's how bad it is.
And it has really shown up to be a big problem in the animal industry, faster. Because we are vaccinating, the dogs don't live as long as people. So in 10 years, if they're receiving 10 or 12 vaccines times four, because that's how many annual visits they have, we're seeing a speeded up version of what's going to happen to the human population.
Exactly.
When the research came out, and what Dr. Dodds had said in the Tulsa meeting was that every time you vaccinate your dog, you are mutating its DNA. What we didn't know back then when vaccines were first made was that by putting all of these proteins inside close to our replicating, you know, DNA and RNA, and viruses are smart. They have the replicative ability. I don't know if you could ever fully inactivate one, because even having its proteins picked up, they've shown that this happens time and time again, that they're incorporating. This is why it's important what you eat, because what you eat is called epigenetics. To understand that what you are putting into your body, whether it's good organic food or if it has pesticides in it, that's being worked into your body tissues. That becomes part of your physical being. The same thing's happening to our dogs. So I know they've proven that with one of the vaccinations for distemper in cats the modified live viruses have to be grown on cell culture to continue to get them to be before they're, you know, put into the vaccine. And by carrying over that cell culture for the feline distemper vaccine, they carried in cat A's kidney cells, which was the line that the virus was grown on. So now you have cats getting kidney failure, and this is because they're producing antibodies to the kidney cell itself, and it no longer can distinguish self from non-self. If you look at, I can't remember what the term's, anyway, there's a term for medicine. It's like having a terrorist in your body, and your body doesn't know how to handle it.
It's iatrogenic.
Anthroposophic medicine? Is that
yes.
Right? Yes.
There's a Kate Birch uses that term.
Yes.
But
yes,
you can
exactly.
use that to see what's happening in the world today, that this is just like an invasion of a terrorist behind enemy lines and us not even be able to find out who they are.
Well, I have to raise the issue of the USDA vaccine licensing process as part of the problem. One of the things that some veterinarians point to when they try to justify vaccinating all of their patients every year with everything is that the vaccine labels state that they're for 1 year. And one of the problems there is that the USDA does not require long-term studies in order for the vaccine manufacturers to license their products. They basically have to show that there's, except for the rabies vaccine, all they have to do is show that there's antibody production when their vaccines are given. And they have been essentially arbitrarily determined on the labels, and they're not supported by long-term science. And the USDA really needs to change their vaccine licensing standards.
Right. Well, the only vaccine, though, that remains regulated, and the USDA doesn't care about distemper. They don't care about Lyme. They don't care about lepto. The only one they care about is rabies. And so you're doing the right thing and being in the right place, because rabies, to me, is the most dangerous vaccine out there anyway, because of the applications of injecting the rabies virus into dogs and cats. If anyone has read Dr. Pitcairn's book called A New Look at the Vaccine Question, I mean, it's a paper that's available on the Vaccine Think Twice webpage. But anyway, he says, just look at this. You're actually giving them a chronic form of rabies when you do this, and now we know how much overdone it's being, and we have a raising in the aggressiveness in dogs.
Mm-hmm.
We have, oftentimes they'll have seizures that will occur, which is also a form of the rabies, and and distemper both. The vaccines can be given, and then the dog can start to have seizures after that. And then also the furious form will produce aggression, dog fighting, dog biting us, and more problems with dogs being suspicious, of being afraid of strangers. There's all sorts of things that are linked to what
and
happens energetically. Right.
And other neurological problems are associated with that, including demyelination of the nerve sheath and
yes.
that kind
yeah.
of thing. It has a neuroprotein in the vaccine, and it does
right.
impact the neurological system.
Yes.
Right. Anybody who knows freshman chemistry knows that mercury alone is the second most harmful heavy metal to the body after plutonium. And anybody knows that when you mix mercury and aluminum together, that you really got a big problem. As a matter of fact, I think Christine, didn't you tell me that somebody had said that they wouldn't even allow that on the airplanes if they knew?
Oh, yes. Actually, Richard is the one who called in to the Animal Consciousness Radio program that I was on the other day, and he was a – Richard, you need to chime in here. He was a hazardous
well,
animal.
Yeah, I was in charge of hazardous materials and air cargo at a major airline, and one of the things they told us was mercury never goes on an airplane. And there was only one exception to that rule, and you had to be a government meteorologist, and if you were going to pack
thermometers.
Thermometers and barometers, they had to be specifically packed with protection, so that they did not come in contact with any aluminum of the airplane.
No. I read yesterday that mercury was used during the Second World War to sabotage aircraft.
Yeah, the Germans. We would send in people, German agents, into their airfields, you know, as maintenance workers or whatever, with you know, half a pound of mercury. And spread it over their airplanes on the wings and any place that there was aluminum. And, you know, nobody knew anything about it. And if they got caught near the airplane, so, I was just looking. And you would never tell the mercury was there other than a shiny place. But as soon as the airplanes took off, they were at risk, and they sometimes came apart in the air, and nobody could figure it out.
The problem when they vaccinate young children or puppies and kittens, they cannot get rid of the mercury. It actually goes to the brain.
Right.
And I noticed that there was some talk groups from the canine clubs that I was on their websites that were complaining of training issues with these young puppies. Once they start into that vaccine alleyway, it seems like it's almost like the same thing that's happening with the children with the learning disabilities.
And behavioral issues.
Right.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to mention is that if everybody's heard the term Mad Hatter, the way that term got started was back in the late 1800s, they were using mercury in felt tip hats to make the brim stiff. And the people who were working with this mercury became mad. They developed rage reactions and such. That's how that term got started. On my website, drcarly.com, underneath the baby with the needles picture, I've written a critique of the recent federal court decision that awarded damages to a child with autism. And there's a link within that document to a University of Calgary study. It's a YouTube video that actually shows the effect of putting snail neurons in with mercury. And you can actually see the nerve disintegrate. It actually destroys the nerve. And so this is how I realized that this is the cause of Alzheimer's. I also wanted to mention one of my most interesting cases I've ever had was a young child who was mauled by a dog that had been vaccinated with the rabies vaccine, and he developed Tourette syndrome, and I realized that he'd been inoculated with rabies from the dog, and I detoxed rabies from this child, and his Tourette syndrome went away. So it's so insane what's happening, the fact that they're inoculating the dogs with rabies. And this was one of the most amazing things that Dr. Jordan taught me, was that this is the reason the dogs are becoming so aggressive. And as Kate Birch explains in her excellent book, I was so glad that Dr. Jordan told me about that book, Vaccinations, I forget the exact name of the book, but she talks in there about the miasms that are being created. And in my dog, who has never been vaccinated, I actually realized that my dog was very fearful of thunder, and the homeopathic vet that I took my dog to told me to give my dog Listen, which is a homeopathic for rabies. And, in fact, my dog's fear of thunder went away after I gave the dog Listen. Now, my dog has never been vaccinated, so that's how I realized that the miasm of rabies was actually passed on to my dog from her vaccinated ancestors.
You can't forget that these vaccines are causing genetic damage.
Exactly.
So you can have a non-vaccinated puppy still show problems. When this is the same thing I choose to understand, that as the government used to blame parents because it was their genetics that was causing an autistic child. In reality, it's the vaccines that caused the genetic problem to begin with, which is perpetuated with the next generation.
Exactly.
So there are sometimes when you have the problem in the puppy or the kitten or the baby because of the prior generation having been vaccinated. A lot of these understandings of things like miasms and how the energetics are actually inoculated are things that are discussed in length when you go through homeopathy programs, but it's there. They've always had the answers to what this problem was really all about. One of my best books, I think, that was ever recommended to read, Dr. Pitcairn had suggested that I get the Rise in Criminality and Social Violence,
yes.
The Assault on the American Brain by Harris Coulter. And if you read in there, it plans it out. I mean, that man will probably pass away before the rest of the world understands what genius he did on connecting the post-vaccinal encephalitis and what it was causing to the human health, or I should say this health. And in his comment towards the end of the book, he said, medical hubris and its consequences, the collaborative damage, the collateral damage that's being done, you know, that we will look back on this time of the use of vaccinations in shame and in horror. And
yes.
There is no reason to not believe that when you look at movies like The Medicated Child, the documentary The Medicated Child, those problems in those children are coming as a result of vaccination. And it turns out it's a government-mandated program. So as far as animals are concerned, the only government-mandated vaccine that's required is rabies, and this is why we have to do whatever we can do to minimize. It was in last year's November 2007 Dog World magazine. Dr. Dodds had a little blurb in there that is eventually, when this research has been completed, not that there's any doubters on this side of the fence, but that an animal may in his lifetime get one or two rabies vaccines, and that will be it. So
which
look what happened.
Actually, Patricia, that or Dr. Jordan, that is an interesting point, because the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, has a study out that they performed, let me see what the date was, in 1991. What they did was they took a look across the country at all the cases of rabid cats and dogs, and what they found was that there were no instances of any dog or cat who had received two proper rabies vaccinations in puppyhood or kittenhood who had contracted rabies. So that study right there indicates that two doses is adequate.
Right, right. And that's what Dr. Schultz believes, you know. And his own dogs, he only vaccinates. Now, not rabies aside, because there's very outdated, very backward, very need-to-be-changed public laws on all of the books, all the states, and then they're so confusing. Some states, cities, and counties contradict how often your animal has to be vaccinated for rabies. But I can guarantee you that in all instances, these laws are made by people who have they have the authority, but they do not have the science or the education and training to understand what they're even, you know, how they're wording these. But they shouldn't be, he only requires for his own dogs, he says, look at what I'm trying to protect them from. Distemper, rabies, and parvo. Those are the three viral diseases that are like no comeback diseases, and he doesn't want them to catch them. So he imprints the genetics as a 15-week-old puppy. He gives them one vaccine, and that's it. And he just lost his golden retriever. I think he was 16 years of age. And what Dr. Schultz told me is that dog was only vaccinated one time in his life at 15 weeks. He was titer checked every single year up to the time he died, and he was just as strong with his titer when he left this world as he was the first 3 weeks after his initial vaccine.
And he does that. Dr. Schultz also, well, up until recently, had seven dogs, and he also has the same protocol for other family members. His children and his grandchildren's animals receive one of the modified live core canine virus vaccines after the age of 16 weeks, and he also gives them separately. He does not combine the vaccines. He will give one, wait for a couple of weeks, take a titer. If there's a positive titer, then he never vaccinates that dog again.
Right. I think that's great because we have him on that movie. There is a DVD you can go to on the web at the www.drdumore.com, Dr. Dumore. .com has a video that's going to be on there soon with actually Dr. Schultz's very words in there. He says, and this is the protocol for Wisconsin's veterinary medical school. He said, if there was one outbreak, you can believe, because it's, you know, some of the veterinarians locally believe they're taking money out of their mouths and challenging their lifestyle for not being able to vaccinate so often. But if one thing went wrong, he said, it would be on the front of the, you know, New York Times, and it wouldn't just be a local issue. They'd have, you know, like national attention pointed at him towards it. So the fact that he's been doing this for over 20 years, you know, the other thing is I have a friend here in Massachusetts. She has a holistic practice up in Hopkinton. They're doing a review study now. She has, it's been 20 years ago. She quit vaccinating as frequently and started running titers. And as far as rabies, still following the law, but she noticed that when she would insist her clients have that titer taken, she can only remember two cases where in all of that time frame that somebody did not have enough antibody already, where, in other words, they were getting a vaccine needlessly. Her very own dog this year died after getting an autoimmune disease. It had its one-year rabies. When it was due for its 3 year, she titered her first. She was fine, but because of the laws of Massachusetts, she engaged that law. She vaccinated that dog. That dog immediately came down with an autoimmune disease, and 18 months later is dead. and, you know, at 3.5 years old.
Well,
and
speaking of rabies titers, when my meadow, my dog developed a mast cell cancer directly on the site of a rabies shot. You could even see the syringe hole in the center.
Right.
And that was, he was six when he had a surgery for that. And 3 years later, he still had cancer. They had dirty margins, and it had metastasized. So he qualified for the medical exemption to the rabies law in Maine. We titered him, and he had not been vaccinated since the age of six. His titer count to rabies was 1 to 5,800. In humans, a titer of 1 to 5
is enough, right?
Adequate.
Right. Well, this is the thing. I have a little dog this year that I just tried to see how far I could go. At 5 months of age, I titered him. He never even had a rabies vaccine, and yet he still had protection. Now, how did he get that? I asked Dr. Schultz that, you know, face-to-face. He said, wow, the mother really gave him good immunity. So immunity travels. It travels on the genetics. Now, I'm not saying to stop vaccines completely, but we've got to find a better test than the titer test as it stands, because there's no way to use that and say that there's not, you know, if it's a non-responder, he may very well have immunity, but it, you know, because it's stored in memory and on the cells. But one thing I do know is that there is no reason in this earth for them to be giving a vaccine. And Dr. Schultz has it in our internal medicine book. Back in 1992, he wrote with Dr. Scott.
Mm-hmm.
He said that there was no scientific reason to be given dogs vaccines every year unless it was to generate income.
I read a book, and I'm going to just read a sentence here for you just to create some conversation. The book is called The Virus and the Vaccine, the true story of a cancer-causing monkey virus, contaminated polio vaccine, and the millions of Americans exposed, by Debbie Bookchin and Jim Shoemaker. They're two investigative reporters. Now, I'm on page 93, and it says here, the technical committee had created a new health standard for vaccine contaminants. All are presumed benign until proven otherwise. And there was a doctor, Bernice Eddy, who identified that SV40, simian virus number 40, when injected into rats, created tumors and cancer. And she was shut down. She was actually minimized and isolated. I think she counted paper clips for 10 or 15 years of her employment. But they didn't want to know anything about it. Now, that's the human vaccine.
Right.
How callous are we with the animal vaccines?
Well, just take a look at Fort Dodge. I actually have a warning letter here right in front of me from the FDA to Fort Dodge. They were so sloppy and careless in their handling of veterinary vaccines that they were contaminating the injection fluid that was supposed to be sterile for the vaccines, and these were going out obviously before they were cited by FDA, and they were flagrant regulatory violations in areas that were supposed to be sterile. So I think that there's much less vigilance when it comes to the veterinary vaccines than there is for the human vaccines. So
I know there is, because Dr. Schultz even found out that some of the vaccines didn't have anything in there to stimulate immunity. That's why all the studies that he's been involved with, he tracks all of those companies and tests their vaccines even without being paid for it later on, because his name is on that. But as far as the Fort Dodge vaccine, I have to tell you, because just 4 nights ago, I was at a Fort Dodge meeting. Yes, they sponsored this for the veterinarians to come with their staff and gave them a wonderful meal over there at the Fireside Grill. And after that, we listened to a presentation about how much better their vaccine, which is a whole Bactrin, very highly adverse reaction related, is much better than the Muriel vaccine, which is recombinant DNA. And then they went on to list 5 flagrant lies that I knew about, and I came home and immediately emailed Dr. Schultz about. But and then they went ahead and put out how great their new product Promaris was. But anyway, at the question and answer period, I shot my hand up and asked them, was this Lyme's vaccine that Fort Dodge made, what was it that made it so robust? Because they were very proud about how robust their vaccine was. Well, I asked them if it had any mercury in it, and they danced around trying to say that, and they tried to give me another name chemically. I said, I don't care what form of mercury in it, does it have mercury in it? And then, yes, it does. And then I asked them if it had an adjuvant in it, and they danced around that for a total of 5 minutes and tried to use other words, but he didn't know who he was dealing with. And I said, no, I want to know if one of these the aluminum salts that has been listed from 1999 by the World Health Organization as being a grade 3 out of grade 4 in carcinogenicity. Well, he tried to say it was a proprietary. Oh, there's their big wheel out. This is why most veterinarians haven't got a clue what they're injecting into these animals, because some of the companies like Fort Dodge will say it's proprietary, because if they told you what it was, then you could go research it and see that it was not tested individually in the vaccines, and that anything that is happening as a result of them using that vaccine in the animal is most definitely an adverse vaccine reaction, and they should be held accountable for it.
Yes. Well, Dr. Carley, you may be able to confirm this. I have been told that by veterinary vaccine researchers that in the human vaccines, for instance, tetanus, all of the adjuvants are standardized. So one manufacturer's tetanus shot will contain the same adjuvant as another company's. But that is not the case in veterinary vaccines. A Fort Dodge adjuvant is not necessarily comprised of the same components as, say, a Mariel veterinary adjuvant. So it's really hard to tell what is causing a problem potentially for an animal that's being injected with these vaccines. Is that correct, that the adjuvants in human vaccines are standardized?
Well, yes, it is. But you see, the whole reason for an adjuvant is to make the immune system become hyperactive. Mm-hmm. So whether they're standardized or not, they're still very, very dangerous. And I just wanted to say one thing, and then I'm actually going to have to get off the call because I have someplace I have to go. But first of all, I am against all vaccines. I think the entire process is insane, and that is my goal, is to stop this altogether. I don't think there's anything, there is no such thing as a safe vaccine. These actually have the potential to cause the extinction of the human race. That's how dangerous it is. And as we go through successive generations of vaccinees, as Dr. Jordan already stated, it's becoming self-evident in the animal community. It's becoming more evident in humans as well. And that's why my goal is to stop this altogether. When you actually think of the concept of protecting yourself by injecting yourself with the very thing that you don't want to come down with, it's totally insane. And the key to good health, as far as I'm concerned, is proper nutrition. As Dr. Jordan mentioned, the danger of foods. We have now a big problem with genetically modified organisms. There's an excellent book out called by Jeffrey Smith called Genetic Roulette, which goes into this in great detail. And you're having all of these genetically modified organisms in food now interacting with genetically altering viruses that are being injected into us. And it's so important that we stop this insanity. And, of course, once we do so, I totally agree with what Dr. Jordan said, that one day we're going to look back on this period of time where this was being pushed and realize that it's worse than the bloodletting days of medicine. I mean, what they're doing now to people and pets with these vaccines is just unconscionable, in my opinion.
I'm going to have to leave soon also, but I did want to mention in response to all of the comments that it's so important for parents and dog owners to do their homework on the vaccines before their precious ones are vaccinated. I had to learn the hard way, and I lost my favorite dog to an adverse reaction to a rabies shot, and that's not the way to learn. Do your homework before you vaccinate your children or your animals.
Yes, I just want to also mention one other thing. This whole idea of the government mandating vaccines for people or pets, what is that all about? We have to start asking ourselves, what is their actual purpose for doing this? because, as has been discussed, there is no science behind vaccines. You can read any vaccine insert, be it for people or pet. They all say they have never been tested to see if they cause cancer. And this is even true for the human vaccine now called Gardasil, which is supposed to protect young girls from
cervical cancer.
Even that vaccine says that the vaccine has never been tested to see if it causes cancer. So it's outrageous that they're actually mandating that people get the vaccines. And there's a very important book called Vaccination's a Silent Killer by Ida Onaroff and Eleanor McBean. And in that book, they talk about how the 1918 allegedly Spanish flu epidemic pandemic was actually caused by inoculations given to soldiers in World War I, which was the first war in which they started vaccinating the military. And now they're talking about the bird flu. They keep talking about this bird flu pandemic that's going to happen, and they say it's not a matter of if but when. And that's because the bird flu vaccine, which has already been licensed, will cause the bird flu pandemic. So what I encourage people to say is to start just saying no, because once you have a vaccine injury, yes, there are things you can do with homeopathy to detox the vaccine and to reverse the damage. But it's just the same as if you've been shot with a bullet. You can take the bullet out, but you'll always have that injury there to some degree. And I totally agree with what you're saying, that you must investigate before you vaccinate, and after you get done investigating, you'll just say no. That's what I would do if I was anyone listening. So I want to thank you for this opportunity to be on this call, and I hope that it wakes up a lot of people.
Well, Dr. Carley,
before you go,
yes,
Dr. Carley, would you give a plug to your website and where you do your podcast?
Sure.
Or your
My website is drcarley.com, drcarley.com. I have two internet radio shows every Wednesday at 12 noon. I'm 12 noon Eastern. I'm on Republic Broadcast, broadcasting.org. The links are on my website. And every Thursday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, I'm on bbsradio.com. That's Boy Sam, bbsradio.com. And I've had Dr. Jordan on as a guest. She's in the archives on BBS Radio. Two shows we did last May were outstanding. And I encourage the listeners to check those out to learn more. And just realize that everything that's happening to the pets is also true in the people. That's why they use animals for researching drugs for humans, because the physiology is the same. And so what's happening to the pets, that's what's going to be what happens to the people if we don't stop this insanity. So it's just such a wonderful thing to be finding more and more people that are waking up and realizing that this practice, just like Jordan said, it's considered like the simplest thing to do. You take your child or your pet to the doctor and you get them vaccinated, having no clue as to the damage that you're actually causing. It's just amazing. And, of course, I was brainwashed in medical school. Just like everybody else, I got my son all his vaccines, and he became brain damaged, and that's what woke me up. And this is my mission, is to stop this insanity.
Dr. Carley, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Carley. And
I wish you every success.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Dr. Jordan, thank you for being on. I have to go also. I have two children to homeschool today, and it's late. And Richard, thank you so much for inviting me to be on your show. I appreciate it.
Well, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Now, I'm going to put a little plug in if I can, because I just found out about this on the dogwise.com, dogwise.com. It's a place where you can buy books and DVDs about training. And there's a new DVD that Catherine O'Driscoll, who has a very good website called The Canine Health Concern, she's out of the UK, but there's a new DVD, The Truth About Dog Health, where she goes over with great detail researchers and interviews all over the world. She, like you, Chris, lost dogs to the rabies vaccination, mm-hmm. and she has Dr. Christopher Day, who I personally know. He's a veterinarian. He's a homeopath. His father was an allopath. His mother was a homeopath, veterinarians, both of them. And he does not use any vaccines whatsoever. And I think that the information in that DVD is going to set a lot of people from being blind to having their eyes opened.
thank you again.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Now, before you go, Chris, I want to read you my opinion, and what was said here today had no effect on it. And like I say, this is my opinion. I think that vaccines have become a defense to communicable diseases because the medical and science communities do nothing to bolster or improve the immune system for neither humans nor animals. They have no test, they have no treatment, and they have no answers. It's up to the individual. After all is said and done, no one will take better care of you than you.
Thank you for participating in my program, the Illness Podcast.